After reading the previous chapter, I imagine the next thing you as the reader will be interested in is whether or not you have been abducted, and if so, what can be done about it. Many people who have been abducted are already quite certain of it. Others have had subjective experiences they are not sure of or simply want confirmation of what they feel did happen to them. Many want to know how to tell whether or not they were abducted. Recognition of an abduction or alien interface will usually occur first in your dreams. It is typical for memory blocks that were implanted in your memory to erode, with consequent leaks of implanted memories surfacing in the dream state. After this, the next level is actually remembering your abduction memories. You will swear that you were taken aboard a UFO and worked upon. If you follow this memory even further, you might yet discover that the alien memory was actually a cover for a human abduction that might have occurred in the back of a meat truck or the like. Further indications of being abducted also include the following: memory loss, missing time, a pronounced and continued ringing in the ears, waking up inexplicably in the middle of the night, and sudden psychic abilities appearing that are not otherwise explained. Many people will have further inquiries and may want to seek out somebody so they can be regressed to the time period in question. There are different techniques, and you will want to find something that is comfortable for you. Deprogramming is too heavy a word for what I am referring to here. Usually, one is taken by hypnosis through different layers of consciousness. Unfortunately, ordinary hypnosis generally only penetrates the first two layers of consciousness, and the real information is often missed. The aliens and the government seek to bury their dirty work, which is usually found in the third or fourth layers of consciousness. There is also a fifth level of consciousness which the government and aliens have trouble reaching. This is the area where the physical mind reaches the non-physical mind. I know people will ask me to elaborate on these different levels of consciousness, so I will be quick to say that I am being somewhat bold in defining them. These are other arbitrary divisions based upon the average responses of people I have observed. If you work with people in this type of work, you will eventually recognize these layers of consciousness on your own, although you might want to give them different names. There are many levels of physical consciousness which have never really been scientifically categorized in textbooks. Accurate information about the human mind is deliberately confused. Some books say there are four non-physical levels of consciousness, but I believe there are more. This area is the most difficult to penetrate because beings are usually wrapped in the more physical aspects. This last aspect is your saving grace as regards true abductions. In other words, there are aspects of the spirit which no one can penetrate, not even the most subtle and ingenious of aliens. The best line of defense to abductions is to just say no. It is an esoteric truth that nothing can affect you unless you yourself allow it or give permission for it to occur. Of course, saying no may not be so easy. In that case, you will want to find someone you trust that can work with you. But you should never lose sight of the fact that you ultimately have the direct ability to determine your own fate. There is also a higher level phenomenon of abduction where the subject concerned feels he is communicating with aliens within the confines of his own conscious will. He or she may be going to different dimensions and exploring various aspects of existence with no trauma being present. Even so, these people sometimes need help with the various things they encounter. For those who have serious problems or are dealing with such subjects, it should be realized that one's sexuality must be cleared out first. The reason for this is that this is the deep level where people's programming resides. If this area is cleared up, all the other blocks will clear out fast. But one must be very careful. A wise practitioner will only allow a bit of trauma to surface at a time. Too much could be overwhelming to the subject. We all possess trauma. You may not feel anything now, but you likely have sustained injuries during your life that were accompanied by pain and emotional trauma. It may not be in your mind now, but it is stored away in a place where you don't remember it anymore. If you start downloading your mind, you will feel the pain once again. The government will hide their programming behind the trauma in your mind. They also set it up so that if you go into the region of your mind where your ESP, extrasensory perception, is stored, you will find trauma. This lowers your psychic ability. the more trauma you have, the less ESP will be present because your third and fourth level of subconscious is occupied with the trauma. Consequently, almost anyone can multiply their ESP powers simply by clearing out the level of the mind where the ESP comes from. When either the aliens or the government bury memories of an abduction below the trauma, they have done a very ingenious thing. As soon as you approach the area, you're going to panic because you can see all your trauma. I have witnessed people who tried to undergo fast deprogramming, which unfortunately resulted in all their traumas surfacing at once. Two of these people were cocky and thought they could handle it. Both flipped out and one even had a car crash. Both practitioners and abductees should keep these factors in mind when they penetrate the deeper layers of consciousness. Chapter 18, Implant. Just as we spoke about physical and astral abductions, there are also physical and astral implants. In the course of my work, I've actually seen a unit of thought placed into the auric field encompassing a person's body. This is a typical astral implant which acts as a unit by itself in sending out its influences or readings. Physical implants break down into two categories, inert implants and biological implants. An inert or purely physical implant is a piece of metal, crystal, silicon chip or other substance which is inserted into the body. These are designed to transmit right into the subject's nervous system. I recently found out that many of these implants are biological. When a subject for biological implanting is picked up, a sample of their cell structure is taken. The abductors then do some genetic engineering on the DNA and cell structure, culture it and grow a transceiver out of the biological matter. This sounds more than a bit avant-garde, but there is no scientific research which indicates that a biological material cannot be configured to manufacture a radio transceiver. Where a normal transceiver would have wires, a biological version uses bionic cell structures that replicate the wire and other circuitry. One implant has been discovered that is typically inserted in the body just above the gonads in the male. I'm not sure exactly where it would sit in the female. The implant is designed to transmit when the subject becomes sexually excited. If the subject is not excited, then no transmission will occur. Although these implants are often connected to sexuality, it is not always the case. I found one instance where this type of implant was also connected to the optical center of the brain. In other words, as I waved my hand in front of one guy's eyes and face, the transmission of the implant changed. A bizarre and graphic example of a biological implant came to light when a fellow from Brooklyn visited me and wanted to be scanned for implants. At that particular time, I was using spectrum analyzers, grid oscillators. This is a device which looks for resonant networks, and other equipment in order to find implants with radio circuitry in them. As I moved an RF, radio frequency, probe over his body, I noticed a signal appeared when I brought it close to his abdomen. If I took the probe away from his abdomen, the signal went down and almost disappeared on the spectrum analyzer. Of course, anyone who works with electronics knows spectrum analyzers aren't that accurate, so I had to zero beat the signal. This means that I put the signal into an analyzer so that it could be matched up with the signal being transmitted through this guy's body and identified. I wanted to find out the actual carrier frequency that the implant was on, and I did. Lo and behold, it was the same as Channel 25 in Brooklyn. This was a rather amazing discovery and was rather unbelievable. I then converted the signal so that it could be read out on a television monitor. Sure enough, it was the same Channel 25 and I could see it on the screen. This guy was actually intercepting Channel 25 from Brooklyn and rebroadcasting it. His implant was on the same exact frequency, but there was also a bizarre technical oddity at work. This implant transceiver was acting in the manner of what is known as a simplex repeater. This is a device which has a receiver that receives the signal. There is then a delay after which the signal is transmitted. It is called a repeater because it repeats the signal. The man's implant was perplexing because the receiver and transmitter were on at the same time. This may not sound like anything unusual to the average reader, but as an electronics expert I was amazed. I had never seen such a device, nor do I know how to construct one. After I thought about this for a while, I realized that someone had set up an ingenious system. They were actually piggybacking their implant transmissions on channel 25. If anyone were to get close to him with a radio sniffer and pick up the signal, they would automatically assume it is channel 25 and think nothing of it, as the fellow spends most of his time in that region. Video information travels along what is called a synchronized pulse. More specifically, it travels above the pulse. The ingenious aspect of this particular implant transmission was that it went in a downward direction below the pulse. They were piggybacking the transmission by using another aspect of the pulse to carry their information on it. This is clandestine broadcasting at its best. After this fellow realized that he possessed some sort of transceiver implant in his body, he volunteered to be X-rayed. Although several different X-rays were done, no implant was found. An MRI done on him revealed a sack of tissue that existed where it shouldn't be. It was simply a fatty deposit. That was all the doctor had to say about it. The fatty deposit was directly connected to blood vessels. Realizing that blood is a saline solution which acts as a good conductor, the pattern was all too clear. The blood vessels ran right through his groin area, which acted as the antenna for the implant. It was powered biologically and for all practical purposes was alive. There is another class of implant surfacing, part of which acts like a portable computer and sits under the breastbone in the center of the chest. Over the heart on the left side, just at the breastbone, you will sometimes find a chip. This acts as the CPU or central processing unit of the implant. It stores the memory and programs to be activated. At the bottom of the rib cage is the biological implant, which is the transceiver. It receives signals and sends them to the CPU chip at the top of the ribs. All of these are connected by an incredibly thin wire to another chip at the base of the neck. This is the neural interface, which connects to the spine and the brain. This implant is organized by a group of 5 electrodes for each nerve. As the nerve impulse travels down the neuron, one electrode will sense it. Another one will cancel the impulse. A third will reinsert the previous nerve impulse or a brand new one. The other 2 electrodes are referred to are simply reverse directions designed to nullify the impulses already described. In this way, the entire neural net can be accessed and the implant is fully accessible to the motor functions of a human being. It is all very sophisticated. Additional research has shown that broadcasts in the HF, high frequency, region reveal a pulse with fuzzy renditions which resemble patterns indicated by the neurological information just mentioned. This may be the signal used to transmit to this particular style of implant, but I am not absolutely sure at this point. The reason this implant was not previously discovered was that it will shut down if you attempt to probe the neural net in an attempt to find it. I fortunately came across a young fellow where it was apparently malfunctioning and didn't shut off. I immediately scanned for the implant and found a group of implants. To my surprise, I discovered that I was able to interface with the implants straight to the CPU through an empathic function that just happened to respond to the codes I knew from Montauk. I was able to shut it off, turn it back on, and was even able to scan some of the programming and memories that had been recorded. It was long before I began to remember that I had also designed part of it. I was on the team that engineered it. The implant had been developed at Montauk with my help. This explained how I was able to turn the thing on and off at will. The circuitry had recognized me. I always like to think that I wasn't involved in such negative nastiness as this, but I've had to face the truth and confess. I was one of the testers and programmers of the Montauk boys. This also brings another issue to the forefront: was I programmed? I have had to ask this question a number of times. My answer is yes. I was programmed and probably still am to some extent. This is why I work with people and do research. I also have a group of psychics who track the work I do in order to ensure that I am working for the benefit of the people concerned and am not carrying out some form of government program. I am very conscious and concerned about this aspect of my work. Sometimes I feel that I may be the only one who can do this type of work, because I'm just about the only one who has fallen out of a government project who is also capable of doing this level of deprogramming. And, if you're going to deprogram someone, you've got to know how the original programming was done. In many cases, I know how to open these guys right up because I helped program them. I would love to have someone who knows these methods deprogram me. But I've been unable to find anyone trustworthy and available who is willing to learn the methods. I also have to be security conscious in the extreme. There are other implants besides the ones I have already described. For example, there is a whole class of implants dedicated to sensing signals from an exterior location and transmitting back to it. These implants can be located throughout the body but are often found behind the left ear. This type looks like a shard of crystal or black rock with lines in it. It is very advanced technology and is used by the aliens to find their abductees. These implants do not necessarily affect the thinking processes. They are transponders whereby a signal is sent from a home location. The implant recognizes and sends a signal back. With the proper equipment, the abductee can be located. Every so often these transponder implants are rejected by the subject's body and find their way to the surface. One abductee reported a crystal coming out of his forehead while another saw one come out of the head of his penis. I think that government implants in the genital region are based upon an original alien design. After discovering implants in the scrotum, penis, and vagina, they began to figure out why the aliens were doing this and started making their own. Their next step was to add to the design and make their own implant structure. Where these implants are found in the body depend upon what is being monitored or what nervous structure that implant is supposed to interrupt. These devices usually look like a rock with most of them being shaped like a teardrop. The sides are straight with half moons on the front and back. They are usually placed in the tissue and left there. At times, wires can be found coming out of the implants which are typically attached to the nerve ganglia. I am not sure what powers these crystal implants have as I've not yet been able to pick up the signals they send. These are not the only implants, but they will hopefully give the reader an insight into how complex and intricate they can be. Next, we will take a look at how one can detect and clear out an implant. Chapter 19, Detecting and Clearing Implants. There are many ways to detect physical implants. One can be physically scanned with the latest technology in magnetic resonance imaging. They can also be picked up with different types of electronic equipment. Perhaps the easiest way is to psychically scan the aura of the subject concerned. An implant will always create a disturbance in the aura of a person because any object that does not belong in the body will manifest as an auric turbulence of some kind. The aura is the electromagnetic field that surrounds the human body. It could also be defined as the interface between the spirit and the body. Some people see auras as plain as grass. I personally can scan in front of a person's body with my hands and can detect disturbances in the auric field. This will not only reveal the existence of an implant but its location in the body as well. I realize most practitioners do not have electronic or medical equipment at their disposal for recognizing implants. Aura scanning is something that many people are capable of and can be acquired as a skill by those who are interested and intuitive. You can start by running your hands over a body, without touching it, and simply feeling the disturbances in the electromagnetic field. There are, of course, varying degrees of expertise. Once the implant is detected, it can then be cleared out. But first, the subject should be prepared for the rising of the Kundalini. Kundalini is originally a Hindu concept and is defined as the primal energy or life force in human beings which manifests in a serpent-like pattern. All energy, including life, begins with spiral patterns that manifest into more detailed and complex forms. This spiral can be seen in the pattern of fire and is the primary emanation. Geometric patterns in nature form around these spirals and eventually develop into biological organs in the physical plane. En route to the physical plane, one will find energy patterns which swirl in vortex-like patterns and form a snake or serpent-like pattern. This channel of energy is known as Kundalini, which means serpent. It begins in the gonads where the germ of life begins and winds its way around the area which we know as the spinal column. There are seven particular way, stations or energy centers that represent evolutionary stages in life. These energy centers are whirling vortices of energy known as chakras. The first chakra begins in the gonads and is concerned with the immediate survival thrust of the organism. This blends into the second chakra, which concerns the reproductive processes of life, sex. The third chakra corresponds to the solar plexus, which signifies the survival power of the organism. These first three chakras are known as the lower chakras, as they are the baser aspects of life function. Although they are lower, they are just as necessary to the whole as the higher aspects. From the solar plexus we move up to the chest cavity, and this center is known as the heart chakra. This is where the emotions and feelings are processed by the organism. Ideally, this chakra should blend the lower chakras with the higher chakras. The heart concerns itself with matters of equilibrium. People suffering from heart attacks are often shocked by information which leaves them in a hopeless state of imbalance that manifests as cardiac arrest. Above the heart, we have the throat center. This regulates verbal expression, which should ideally be processed through the heart center. If someone speaks from the heart, they make perfect sense. As life evolves up this ladder of energy, it next arrives at what is popularly known as the third eye. This is the area right above the nose and corresponds to the pituitary gland, which is the master endocrine gland. This center concerns the intellect and one's ability to visualize and project. If the area is fully unencumbered, the individual will possess considerable psychic ability. The spiral of life does not end with the intellect but moves to the center of the brain and the pineal gland. This is known as the crown chakra and represents universal consciousness. Energy can be received external to the body from this receptacle that connects to the infinite. The Hindus represented this evolution of energy as a serpent, and it has been gloriously rendered in different forms of art since antiquity. Each chakra is symbolized as a flower that opens as the serpent winds its way up the evolutionary spout. The serpent in the Bible was a symbolic version of this energy pattern, which manifests throughout creation. It is for this reason that the snake was sacred to many ancient cultures. Although I said there were seven main chakras, there are actually an infinite amount of tiny energy centers. I have introduced the concept with seven main chakras, as most people familiar with Kundalini will recognize that particular system. According to my education, there is also an eighth chakra located between the second and third. This represents intelligence, but it is a rather primal and universal intelligence. It can best be understood with respect to lower life forms evolving initially through sexual reproduction and power struggles. Until the organism attains an intellect, it has to tap a universal intelligence in order to evolve at all. This aspect is conscious but is not very self-reflective. I mention it because many abductees are programmed through this eighth chakra. In summary, what we have with Kundalini is a tremendously strong conduit of energy which emanates from the seed of life itself. It is not unlike an electrical circuit which can be plugged into by higher forces and given a charge. This aspect of Kundalini tells us that the human vehicle can potentially tap or be tapped by any exterior forces in the entire universe. This is how human beings channel information from different sources, usually assumed to be higher sources. This is the same principle used in radio and television transmission, where the energy equates to waves that literally carry information. In a typical human being, this Kundalini energy is always present but is usually blocked. In The Doors of Perception by Aldous Huxley, it is mentioned that our brain takes in every perception that is possible under the sun. If we were to be subjected by all these perceptions at once, we would be bombarded with chaos and could literally not find our way to the next room. Huxley theorized a function called the reducing valve, which filters our perceptions so that we are only concerned with phenomena that concern our most obvious survival concerns. This cuts us off from a considerable amount of information that is being perceived by our brain. This is the 70 to 90% of our brain that we do not use. It becomes obvious that one could do an entire study concerning the reducing valve and whether it was an evolutionary mistake or holdover, or if it was doctored so that human beings could be trapped and left in a lower state of consciousness from which they could not escape. Considering the outrageous suppression of information in our society, we have to believe the latter to be the case. Implants and thought entrainment are two powerful tools used to accomplish these ends. All of this gives rise to the question, who is doing the manipulating? Various factors are involved, but we will deal with this later. Right now, we are immediately concerned with implants or impediments in the Kundalini and how to release them. The Hindus believe that by stimulating the base chakra, energy will travel up the serpent. As the energy reaches each chakra, it blossoms and opens up, clearing out all the junk that has been accumulated over several lifetimes. As the serpent weaves its way up the spine and opens each chakra, it ultimately opens up the crown chakra, which unites with universal consciousness and spills like a shower of energy around the person. It is the stimulation of the sexual energy which sends it up the spine and breaks the blocks of consciousness. You can consider that each chakra has a block, and as you open the chakras, you are releasing the blocks. This approach is actually a combination of Hindu mysticism with modern psychology and quantum physics. It should only be engaged in by someone who has a complete understanding of what they are doing. Sometimes the activation of Kundalini can be quite overwhelming, as it takes one out of the normal realm of consciousness and activates all sorts of energies that are disconcerting or unfamiliar. On the other hand, if you don't clear yourself out, you have no hope of attaining a higher state of consciousness. It is really just a matter of reacquainting yourself with the natural energies already present in one's constitution. Throughout history, it has been said that one can transcend the physical realm through the activation of one's Kundalini, but it is a perilous and difficult journey that can only be completed after many years of serious work. Much of the reason for this difficulty is that consciousness has been suppressed. We are now moving into an era when this type of activity can be discussed at the dinner table. The route out is certainly more available, but the path still has to be traveled by each individual. There are plenty of practitioners and a lot of literature on this subject. Each one has to find their own way. It should be remembered that actual physical implants are in the minority. They most definitely require special handling. Astral implants and mind control techniques can also be sticky, but are usually much easier to deal with for the common practitioner. None of the information in this chapter is meant to be a complete treatise on how to clear implants. That would require an entire volume. This is only meant to serve as a general guideline for those in need. Chapter 20, Star Wars. Mind control transmissions are another phenomenon that fit in with the subject of implants, although they are of a completely different nature. I will illustrate how these work by relaying a real-life investigation. In the summer of 1995, I received a telephone call from a woman I will identify as Susan DeRee. She felt that she had been targeted by mind control transmissions, sickness transmissions, and just about everything else. Her story interested me enough to the point where I decided I would visit her and do an electromagnetic study. I was already going to a hamfest, where ham radio gear is bought and sold, in Virginia, and it was not too much out of my way to stop in at her home right across from Fort Meade, a military installation in Maryland. When I arrived, we went out to dinner with her friend Bruce, and she began to tell me her life story. Susan was born in 1951 and adopted by a German family who had come to America after World War II and had been involved with Adolf Hitler's Third Reich. Her family owned a business in the Midwest and frequently played host to intelligence personnel such as CIA and NSA staffers. As a young lady, she had some sort of magical initiation. Susan was subsequently implanted and grew up. Today, she claims to have tremendous psychic ability. As an adult, Susan searched for her natural father and found out that he had served extensively in Egypt and was very highly placed in U.S. military intelligence. That was all she could find out, except for the fact that he wanted to disavow all connection to her. After listening to Susan's whole story, she told me that she is targeted and that her stepfamily is still connected to the intelligence community, CIA. Susan strongly believes the common theory that the CIA's roots began with the Nazis' SS. She said the reason she is being targeted is the family business. When her stepfather died, she was to be left half of it. her stepbrother would get the other half of what was valued at about $14 million. Susan believes the intelligence community, working in concert with her black magic uncle, wanted to get rid of her so that the natural son would inherit the entire business. As we drove to her house after dinner, I began the electromagnetic study. I first tuned into an 1080 MHz signal that I had been studying for a month.